Blog Talk Radio.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak with your listeners and speak with you as well,
okay.
And see what we can learn and share and discover together.
Okay, this is going to be good. Okay. Mr. Dunneman, you are from New York State, am I correct?
Yes, ma'am. I'm originally born and raised in Queens, New York, and I guess I've been in Queens and New York all my life.
Okay.
So I'm born and raised. I love it. It's beautiful.
You love New York?
I love New York. I love Queens. Queens has a suburban type of feel to it, and I pretty much appreciate that, you know, being able to go outside, trees, and, you know, walk with your shoes off if you like, and, you know, sitting on the front porch. So, you know, Queens has an atmosphere that just, I don't know, I guess it kind of boosts peace and tranquility, serenity, so to speak, or at least parts of it.
Okay. So you're also the CEO of Beautiful Men and Women Incorporated.
Yes. Yes. Beautiful Men and Women began in 2009, and it started out as a personal and professional development consulting firm where I guess you could say it's based mostly on leadership and character education, which is just personal development, self-awareness, understanding who you are, where you're going, setting goals, communication, anything that has to do with enhancing yourself personally and then professionally, because we believe that personal is professional and professional is personal. You can't separate the two.
Okay. You've given me permission to call you Herman, so...
Yes.
Herman, would you tell my listeners about your educational background?
Okay. I guess I started pretty much like everyone else, you know, with the high school piece, but I neglected to go to college. So after, you know, being in the workforce for a little while, I began to kind of move into a different era of learning. So I, you know, so many different courses were available. So I just decided to take courses. I have a counselor's aid, social living skills, 1, 2, and 3, with the New York State Department of Labor apprenticeship. I'm a basic certified relapse prevention specialist. I have the training of the Anthony Gonzalez. I'm also a credentialed facilitator of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People course written by Stephen R. Covey. I've studied psychology, sociology. I have an emotional intelligence integrated course that I assisted in developing. There's also the integrated criminal thinking chemical dependency course, which I think it's like a 2-year course that I completed. That was under Anthony Gonzalez as well. And then the regular courses. I have business courses that I've done, WEVO, which is workshops and business opportunities. And I just completed a course. Actually, I completed two-thirds of the course, which was with Defy Ventures, and they have an MBA-like entrepreneurial course that I just completed in January of this year, the two-thirds part.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Why did you start your company, Beautiful Men and Women Incorporated? Why did you start it?
Well, there was a need. There was definitely a need, and the need began within me. And there were, you know, I was in a situation where incarceration was involved, and I knew that I had to change, and I didn't know how to change. So in the process of learning how to be a better individual myself, learning how to become responsible and how to develop my character and so forth, and I definitely give a great deal of credit to the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, as well as some work that I did with emotional intelligence. But it taught me, you know, the principles and the meaning of being responsible and understanding different things and fidelity and temperance and so many great, great principles that make life difficult. However, it's very easy to hold on to these things during the day and live these things out and develop in the change. So once I really got a great feel of, you know, what I was doing and what was being done to and through me,
yes,
I just felt it was a huge need to share it with so many others that I knew, that I really, really
knew.
You're
highly intelligent.
Thank you.
Highly intelligent. Yes, go on.
Yeah, I just had to share it with others that I knew were in the same shoes that, you know, I had been in and crossed these same roads and wanted these same things. However, at the time, you know, due to lack of self-knowledge and as well as, you know, other knowledge, didn't have the ability to change. So when I began in 2009, it was a little difficult to really kind of get the message out. Personal development wasn't prevalent in a lot of self-help organizations and you know, in different areas. But I also have a knack for motivational speaking and negotiation to a degree. So I was able to kind of get in the door a lot of times. I had to go in free and, like, really get into uncovering what were some of the personal issues that were holding individuals back from being able to perform in other areas. And that's when, I guess, you know, directors of programs and so forth began to see the need for the information that I was bringing, which was basically personal development, character education, and they began to, you know, purchase the services, and, you know, I developed programs, did workshops and trainings, whether it was staff or whether it was clients, and grew the business.
Okay. What would you say? Now, I know you've taught workforce development. I've read your resume extensively. I've read it and reread it. And
okay.
All the things you've done, it's very extensive. I mean,
thank you.
It's very extensive. The things you have did, the work you have done, the people you have helped. But I have a question. What is the one trait that is needed within workforce development that you feel is needed within workforce development?
The one trait, and when you talk about the trait within the workforce development, are you talking about from the system itself or from the people approaching the system?
The system itself.
The system itself.
Yes.
Excuse me. I think the system itself needs to be a little more flexible. And when you're talking about, you know, and I'm not a complete workforce strategist, but I do know that job development and job creation has the ability to, for lack of a better term, it has the ability to sustain itself. And what I mean by that is that once certain jobs are created, one thing I learned, when they did the when the economy took the hit back in 2009, 2010, one of the first things they cut within a lot of organizations, corporations and so forth, was the education and training that they were fostering through their organizations, through the corporations. So they didn't inform people the way that they were. So if individuals or jobs are created and they're trained to be high performers in these areas, the jobs will sustain itself, and then the business will grow. And once,
yes,
you know, business grows, you know, other job opportunities open up, other things open up, because we're in the information,
yes,
age. You know, things are just developing out of almost nowhere, and they're good. And it's just a matter of the individuals having the necessary skill base to be able to sustain in that, in whatever field, and then to produce. Most times when people like or love what they're doing, they excel at great rates.
Yes.
So I hope I made that clear.
Yes,
understandable.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, you did. Now, I was reading about where you went to talk to a group of women. And the question is, if you were talking to a group of women, what would you tell the women about self-esteem and its situational determinational effects?
Okay.
So
I believe
words.
That. Versus?
Those are your
question?
Words. Those are your words.
And oh, you said versus?
No, I said those were your words.
Right. Self-esteem being
uh-huh.
situational.
Uh-huh. And if you talk to a group of women, yes.
Yes, actually, I was at St. John's University. I had a great
yes.
time with that. One thing I wish college students are wonderful because, you know, they're already learning, they're already sharp, so they can pretty much see things. But I also believe that there are some women out, you know, in America, all over the world, that have issues with self-esteem, that it's a little more difficult for them to be able to grasp the concept. And with self-esteem being situational, you know, as a brief example, if you put a woman who can cook, you know, and I'm not being insensitive to, you know, any gender or what is that, chauvinistic. But if you put
yes.
a woman who can cook in the kitchen, you know, her motivation is high, her confidence is high, her level of, you know, she values herself, her self-esteem is high. But if you put her under the hood of a car and ask her to... Pardon?
Because she likes what she's doing and she's enjoying what she's doing.
Right. But if you put her in the area where she isn't, you know, it isn't a strength, then her confidence and so forth is going to, you know, diminish. So what I covered during that course, as well as, you know, what I try to give to men and women, is that self-esteem is situational. And
okay.
in some circumstances, you're going to go in and your self-esteem is going to be high, and there are going to be others where your self-esteem is going to seem like it's dropping away from under you. And it's just a matter of recognizing that. This is not an area of strength. Doesn't mean that you're inadequate. Doesn't mean that you're, you know, that you're a mistake. Doesn't mean that you're lost. Doesn't mean that that you're unintelligent. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a no one. It's just you're in a situation right now where you're not at your best. You're not comfortable. You're not valued. And that's something that once you understand that, you can now begin to relax and learn to the degree that you begin to learn about the situation you're in and the environment, because we do adapt, and then you
yes.
can become better and better and better at maintaining those type of situations. And before you know it, you know, you can soon one day, you know, hopefully, depending on where your passion is, become the master of yet another situation.
Yes. And I understand that you're not trying to be chauvinist either. I understand exactly what you were given a thing. It would have been like saying if a man is comfortable working on vehicles. I understand what you're saying. I hope my listeners see it too.
Right. Yeah, you can definitely do the reverse. And
yes.
I have a problem. I remember, if you don't mind me going on for a minute. And we're talking about not just self-esteem, or should I say positive self-esteem, as opposed to to knowing yourself. It said, and I was just having this conversation a few weeks ago, that a gentleman is supposed to spend, I think it's a 3 month salary on an engagement ring? Isn't there some type of basic standard for that, Ms. Butler? Have you ever heard of it?
No, I have not heard of
that. Okay, so it's just said, I guess it could be the African American culture, whatever, that a gentleman is supposed to spend a 3 month salary on his wife to be engagement ring. So let's just say that's $6,000, $9,000, whatever you want to call it. Put a price on it. And I find that to be unfair simply because, and I do realize the situation of most men are in developmental stages. And, you know, some of us grow faster than others. But I find that to be unfair that someone can put, or that a woman can actually request a price to be put on a ring when her behavior doesn't match that. And a lot of it has to do with the self-esteem. A lot of it has to do with how they value themselves. And I think where it goes wrong sometimes is that women have the ability to be able to put too much value on the wrong things, you know, in wrong areas, you know, when it comes to our relationships and so forth. And I guess that comes from, you know, 450 years of you know, what we've gone through as a people, to whereas
yeah.
the woman had to, you know, become strong and, you know, pretty much run the family and so on and so forth. And then we have this ideology now where, you know, it's almost to the degree as if a woman doesn't need a man. And, you know, without
I understand what you're saying there. And there should be a place for the father in a child's life, especially. I'm not going to necessarily say a woman's life, because I can't speak for all women.
Right.
But I will say, if there are children involved, their need, if the man is not violent, that's what I say. If the man is
right.
not violent, extremely violent, then
right.
he and it's not a case of where a crime was involved and the child was created, I really feel that the father should have a say-so in that child's life. I had a lady on the show from the Fatherless Generation called Miss Tori J. Evans. She has a foundation in Atlanta, Georgia, and she spoke on that. This has been over a year ago, and she said she has a program where she reunites the father with the children, even if they're incarcerated.
Right.
I believe, if I'm correct, I don't want to be incorrect with that, but she does reunite the children with their fathers. And that is
right.
a wonderful thing that Ms. Tori J. Evans is doing. I applaud her.
Right.
Because
so do I.
To say that a child doesn't need a father, they need both parents, to be honest
right.
with you. Children
right.
need both parents. And
right.
it's sad when a divorce comes up or a relationship separates that the children are not put first.
Right.
As far as women needing men, well, we live in a society today where there are same sexes, so you can't really, well, anyway, I'm not going to touch on that.
Right.
But I understand where you're coming from, but I believe, especially when there are children involved, the daddy needs to be in there.
Right.
The dad does, the father.
And I guess positive self-esteem sometimes can have a grave effect on the decision-making process of an individual. And with the mother being, you know, in most times having full custody of the child, they make decisions based on not just the relationship, but who they believe themselves to be as an individual. And sometimes it isn't always the best thing. It isn't always correct. It isn't always effective. I guess we as individuals sometimes must come to the realization that we may not be the best knower or the most intelligent in an area. You know, through the seven habits, I've learned to remain teachable. And that's not always an easy thing.
Just because the woman is not with the man or the man is not with the woman. They've moved on, just because they have moved on to different relationships or different people, different marriages, does not mean that either parent should go without frequent contact with their child.
Right. Or, I believe, and if, you know, the situation is available, that they should be in contact with one another for the child.
Yes, that's true, too.
It's important that they're on the same, you know, they're on the same page. They're raising
the
child
from
the same,
on the maturity of the two people. Maturity of the two people. Yes.
And sometimes it means backing down. And sometimes it means a compromise. Sometimes it means learning something different. You know, it's a lot, and I respect and I applaud those that have been able to do it from a smooth transitional perspective, because I know that it's not an easy thing to have a child with someone that you're no longer in a relationship with, and, you know, and there are some, you know, some unsettled issues. So it can be difficult because sometimes, you know, it's just one of those days, I really don't want to see her, or, you know, I don't want him near me. And based on those feelings, you know, words are exchanged or behavior, whatever, what have you, and we take it out, you know, on the child or on the relationship between the other parent. And, you know, there has been consequences from that. There has been some very ill consequences from that in the life of children.
Such as the children ended up in prison, confused.
Right.
Yes, I understand that. Ended up pregnant or real young in age, as young teenagers. Okay, on that note, we're going to go to break. I'm going to give you time to get a drink, a water or something, Gatorade or whatever you drink, and we're going to go to break and we'll come back, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, listeners, we're going to pay some bills.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweavers.
Searching for the latest news on entertainment, the economy, business, technology, and creative arts, choose
the Digital Conglomerate Magazine.
Not only do they give you all the latest information, but they're there for you 24/7, baby, giving you the 411 and all you need to know, baby. Visit the Digital Conglomerate Magazine online. Just Google us, baby. We're everywhere. Let's get down to business. So you're having that company function or business function, and you need the proper services to get that business menu pumping. Okay, here's the solution. Call Exquisite Barista Services. Exquisite Barista Services has the experience to create a signature beverage for your business or organization. Services also include barista training, custom beverage menu creation, food and beverage pairing, and so much more. Visit Exquisite Barista Services online at www.exquisiteexpressinc.com or better yet, call 210-701-0143. That's 210-701-0143. Don't take your chances on the other man. Get that grand plan and choose Exquisite Barista Services.
All right, listeners, we're back to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We have as a guest Mr. Herman Dunlema, Jr. from the state of New York. He is the CEO of Beautiful Men and Women Incorporated. Now, listeners, you listen to a very intelligent man. That's what I like to say. He's very intelligent, as you'll find as we go on in the conversation. Herman.
Yes.
So we were talking about we were talking about self-esteem. We were talking about fathers and children's lives, men in general being involved in their children's lives, and about relationships when the people are not, couple are not together, and you may not want to be bothered with them, things like that. But I think we pretty well said what we want to say. I did. Is there something else that you want to say on that?
No. I guess, no, I can actually say that, you know, I believe that we covered everything. There isn't anything else I want to add. I'm sure that that as we, you know, go further into our conversation that, you know, one thing, you know, most things apply to a lot of different things, so we'll be able to cover it. So I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And thank you. You did a fishbowl discussion at the Columbia University School of Social Work. I think it was the Black Caucus Organization.
Yes. Yes, okay, it was a beautiful discussion, too. Very, very beautiful.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure if you spoke, it was. What is the worst stereotype and stigma for black men that you talked about at the discussion?
The worst stereotype was, I'm sure it was the criminal personality. Black men have been stigmatized even before, you know, a lot of the crime issues in the late 80s or in the 80s and in early 90s is, you know, just being no good, lazy, you know, for whatever, what have you. And I guess, you know, transferring from one stigma to another, you know, was probably the most powerful point that we were made, that we were able to make during the discussion. And then dealing with the criminality stereotype or stigma, you know, which the president just recently spoke during the Trayvon Martin case, where he, you know, he has walked, you know, by cars and he could hear the door lock. You know, he walks into an elevator and, you know, people, you know, they kind of tighten up and clutch their purses. I can be sitting on a crowded train, you know, whether I'm wearing jeans and a shirt or a suit and tie, and individuals refuse to sit in the seat directly next to me. So, you know, we discuss those types of issues.
That does something to you psychologically to a certain extent. I'm not saying that it runs you crazy, but because I'm black myself, I'm a black American too. But it does something to your psyche, to your psychology, to you.
It really does.
When people do that. Now, I visited the state of New York many years ago, and I'm from the South, as you probably can tell by my voice.
Right.
And I'm near Alabama. I'm near Alabama. I'm not that far from Mississippi and places,
ooh, wow,
places like that. I'm in the deep South.
Right.
So not in the real, real deep South, but I'm near Alabama. I would tell you that, northern Alabama.
Right.
And I was surprised when I visited New York State. This has been about 15 years ago, maybe longer, of the reaction to me. At the time, I was very big. I was big. I had a low self-esteem.
Okay.
But I was in New York State. It was cold.
Okay.
The reaction to me as a black female was not what I expected from Northerners.
Right.
And it surprised me. There was the sidelong looks.
Right.
There was the, and even with me, there was the clutching of the pocketbooks.
Right.
And things
you get
like
that as well.
So,
yeah,
I got that in New York. I never got that in the South.
But
when I got to New York, I did. I had went to the mall. I was there to buy a toy and some clothes. And I was followed around in the store. And this was in, like, 97, 98, 99.
Right.
And I'd like to know, has anything changed up there? Do they still follow people around in stores like that? Because I know they do it in the South. You know, if you have something, they'll follow you around in the store here in the South. But I didn't expect the North to be that way.
Right. And
it's like
and they
steal something.
They definitely will. I can say for me, I was able to do something, and it was almost like an experiment to begin with, which was, how can I utilize my presence? Although you've never seen me, I'm 6 feet 5 inches. I'm about 255 pounds, and I wear a bald head.
Okay.
So technically, you know, with stereotypes, I fit the profile. You know, I work out, I exercise fairly regularly. So, you know, I have wide shoulders, small waist. I fit the profile. Although it's an athletic build, it still is an intimidating build.
Mm-hmm.
And I received
I wouldn't be afraid of you because I have a brother who's 6'3", 300 and some pounds, 6'4", 6'2", 6'3", 300
right.
and some pounds. I wouldn't be afraid of you because
right.
I have some very big brothers.
Okay, okay. That's a beautiful thing. But I had to recognize
and
that,
I wouldn't be afraid,
number one,
I'm not afraid of black men in general.
Right. And you
my
be.
Daddy was a black man, so.
That's right. We're not scary. You
no.
know, and
no.
Well, some of us can be.
Yeah,
but my point is that I realized that people were afraid of me. So rather than just let them be afraid of me and me continue to receive the results that they wanted to give me, I began to influence their decision with my presence, with my first interaction. So when they saw me, you know, and there were just things that I do that most individuals would feel that they won't do or feel as if they don't have to do because they don't want, some people just don't care. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, normally when I'm wearing, you know, clothes, my shirt is tucked in my pants are worn up. I don't wear hoodies in the winter. I'm very, very particular about, you know, the shoes I wear. I like wearing boots and boots, you know. The weather sometimes requires it. But I'm mindful of, you know, the attire that I wear and how I wear it because I know I have the ability to scare people. And in that allows me to have an influence, excuse me, on how they perceive me from the beginning. You know, first impression. So when they see me, there's a question. I call it putting myself at risk. I don't normally put myself at risk for being associated to the criminal stereotype. So I have to make sure that I'm standing up. I have to make sure that when I'm, you know, when I'm doing something that I move slow in certain situations, that I speak clearly, that I make the initial introduction. I want people to hear me. I want to say good morning. I want to be engaging. This way the defenses will come down and individuals will give me the benefit of the doubt, so to speak, and it's just to a degree. But, you know, I guess it's because if you want to do certain things in this world, I've learned as an African-American man, sometimes you have to make adjustments to your personality in order to be able to do them. You know, what is the bigger picture? Is it I want to be myself, and if no one accepts me or no one, you know, gets close to me, then so be it? Or do I make some minor adjustments and continue to, you know, be the individual that I truly am, you know, let my character and gentlemanship show, and then I'm able to do the things that, you know, I believe that are important to me in my life and that will continue
words,
to allow me to progress.
Out of you. You let people
yeah,
see
so
you
I just made the decision to do
that. Is that what you're saying? You let people
say that again?
You allow people to see the human side of you?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying instead of an object?
Right.
Is that
and
what you're
I
saying?
Allow them to dehumanize me because my presence, my appearance requires the humanistic approach. I love the way you said that. Beautiful. I don't allow people to dehumanize me. And they will. You know, so even following me around the store, they may, you know, I may get that sometimes, and then I'll stop and engage. Excuse me, being that we're walking together, you know, and I'm kind of funny sometimes. So being that we're walking together, would you mind assisting me with this, or would you, you know, or whatever. It you know, communication, I've learned, it's a lot about what you say, but it's more about how you say it. And being able to just come across and show people that you're just as human as they are, that you value yourself just as much as they do, and that you're a non-threatening individual, sometimes it makes a world of a difference.
That is true. Communication does help. You are very correct on that. You are very correct. What is the meaning of emotional intelligence? What is your definition of emotional intelligence?
Emotional intelligence, and I learned so much from reading and taking courses and studying, is the ability to recognize one's own feeling and being able to manage that in an appropriate fashion. So, you know, that's pretty much the definition, or for lack of being able to quote it verbatim, is the definition of being emotionally intelligent. So to be able to recognize your feelings and then behave appropriately. And sometimes realizing that, you know, the emotion is here now, and I have the ability to have some say in how long it lasts, you know. So, and that emotional intelligence, I tell you, when we first opened that up, we opened it up with the formerly incarcerated. Actually, they were incarcerated, and we found that to be the glue to so much of the other things that we were dishing out, because the emotional mind has the ability to supersede the rational mind's ability to function. And two great things I learned about this is that, number one, a part of the brain. Well, let me switch to number ones. Number one, we all have a brain. We all have the same minds, and basically, the brain functions the same in everyone's mind. The only thing that makes the difference is the beliefs, the principles, and, you know, and I guess how they view things. So with the brains or the minds being the same, that means they have the same parts. And there's a part of the brain called the amygdala that that controls the fight or flight syndrome, so to speak. It is the alarm system for, you know, for trust. Is a situation safe? Is an individual safe? So it's, you know, it's the reason that you can look at someone and tell that, you know, something's wrong, or you get that feeling like something's about to happen, and so on and so forth. It's the amygdala. And the great thing about it is it automatically and compulsively scans for safety. Okay. And it's something that you can't stop. So with the emotional mind being so powerful, you know, it's a little like once you become in tune with your emotional self, you know, and sometimes it has a lot to do with what's honest. The emotional mind will tell you, jump over the car. But the rational mind says, that's not a threat. It was just a noise. A branch fell. You don't have to run.
Okay.
And it's not always the rational mind that has the ability to gain control before the emotional mind has the body on full alert. And once you learn that, you know, that your emotions are your emotions, you need to understand or recognize what it is that you're feeling. You'll be able to not only, you know, keep stress down, but deal with relationships and yourself, you know, not even the relationships. The relationships are secondary, but just being able to manage yourself, being able to get peace within yourself, understand you, understand life, see things from a different perspective, gaining intelligence and appropriateness with your emotional life, unbelievable. I'm telling you, it will drive other people crazy, because it seems as if, you know, you're smoothing. And don't get me wrong, you know, I get angry. I still get a little upset, but I instead of going straight to anger, I may say I'm perturbed, I'm frustrated, I'm irritated.
Right. You change your thought process. You change your words that you
took
use
the sting
on
out
yourself.
Of it. I took the sting out of it. You
yeah,
know what I say?
On yourself. Yeah. Okay, I understand.
So even to the degree, you know, you're going for
don't
a job.
Don't say you're angry. Okay.
Right. You're going to
say
a job
internally.
Right, and some people would say they slammed the door in my face. No, they didn't. They closed the door on me instead of slamming it in my face. You know, so if you take the sting out of it, you know, there are emotions lead up to the primaries. They're called secondaries. But normally it's, you know, one thing building on top of another before we get to the angry piece. You know, and it's the same thing with being with anxiety, you know, nervousness, joy, and so many other emotions. You know, they have the ability to do what they do. We don't have control over what hits us, but we do have control over how we manage it. and then how we behave from it. And that's the most important thing. You know, you can feel what you want to feel. It's your behavior afterwards that is really going to make the lasting difference.
And that
but gaining
is emotional
control over yourself, that's a beautiful thing. Knowing that, you know, in the morning, you know, I when I rise in the morning, I'm normally up at 4:30, 5 o'clock, no later than 6. And I, you know, I drink my little coffee and I spend time with myself. You know, even if it's 15, 20 minutes. How are you doing today, you know, Herman? What's going on in your mind? What do we have to do today? And I run these things through my mind. And I'm able to manage my day a little better, as opposed when I'm, you know, I jump up out of bed and I have to start getting dressed and moving around. And so many things are flashing across my mind. And what I'm trying to get to work is not working. And it's, you know, the frustration is building up. And I'm thinking about the consequences and this, that, and the other, and so on and so forth, irresponsibility. And before you know it, you know, you're a mess. And you're chasing yourself the entire day.
Uh-huh.
But if you you start out calm. It's a wonderful thing. I love it. I love it.
Okay. What do you think? Now, I know you've watched TV, you watch the news, and you've seen some things that have come on TV with people who are diagnosed with mental illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that they have been doing, violent crimes. I'm going to ask you this question, and I ask that you answer it to the best of your ability. Do you think the disabled are more often victims of violence or the perpetrators of violence? Because the news, I mean, you see the killings and things. You see people getting sentenced to mental hospitals. You see some of them going on death row. And I know you've worked with people who are disabled, low-income people who are in certain type of facilities.
Right. Right.
So what is your intake? Do you really believe that the majority of people who are disabled, mentally disabled, are violent, or is this just a select few?
I would honestly like to say a select few.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because in the process of growth and development, you know, different generations and so forth, we've all grown up different. And I guess, you know, and I'm just looking at the individuals that I work with, which are mostly African-American and Latino, that the family structure or the culture of what good, strong family is, you know, with each generation diminishes, you know, those rules, those standards, just the appeal itself, you know, and then the education with it. So individuals are allowing other things to affect them in ways that had they had the cultural upbringing, it would have affected them different. And I want to tell you something. I learned this a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine, Brett Scudder. We were talking about mental health, and he said a phenomenal thing. He said there's a difference between mental health and mental illness. And it was really, really phenomenal. So the mental illness part, there are not a lot of people with mental illnesses committing a lot of crime.
Okay.
I believe that a lot of the individuals that are committing these crimes are more of an imbalance with the mental health. And when we talk about the mental health, we're talking about the emotional as well as the psychological. So there's an imbalance in that. And again, remember I talked about once the emotional piece comes in, the most important part is being able to manage your behavior, you know, do things appropriately. And individuals are falling short on a small scale because you know, there's a thing, the antisocial personality traits or disorders, they have the ability to grow.
Okay.
And before you know it, you know, you may start out with a white lie. Now you're doing, you know, the regular lies, and now you're stealing coins. Now you've gone to dollars. Before you know it, you're trying bigger things. So I believe that, you know, criminality itself or those antisocial personality traits is a brain disease, which is a typical chemical imbalance of the mental health, you know, of appropriate or, for lack of a better term, for good, sound, reasoning, responsible mental health. But
All right, Mr. Herman.
I believe that, the majority of individuals committing crimes have a mental health issue, not a mental illness issue.
Okay, thank you for that. I hate to keep interrupting you. That I have to go to break.
Okay.
People pay me for these commercials, so I have to get them played in. All right.
Not a problem.
Give me a couple of minutes.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists, and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweaver.
Listeners, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We had to go to break, but we have on Show Talk with Angela Butler, Mr. Herman Dunham Jr. I pronounced that right. He's from New York
State. That was perfect.
Yes, sir. He is the CEO of a beautiful, the CEO of Beautiful Men and Women Incorporated. Mr. Dunham, before I interrupted you, we were talking. Sometimes people don't always understand why I do the shows I do, but it's a reason I do them, because I know that people are hurting. There are people out there that are really hurting, so I'm hoping to reach somebody and to help somebody. We were talking about, I guess we pretty much, you pretty much said what you want to say about undergoing about the disabled.
Yes.
Or anything else you want to say?
I think the last thing I want to say is, because sometimes we as individuals can really, really be rough on ourselves. We can be really, really hard on ourselves. And all we need is for someone to say that we have an emotional issue or a mental health issue, and even our children, and we grab onto that. And I just want to say that for anyone who is dealing with an issue, who has ever been diagnosed as having an issue, that all is not lost, and that you can find hope in learning yourself as an individual, and then, you know, expanding your knowledge, and, you know, slowing down. It's the little practical things, but all is not lost. I wanted to encourage anyone who has ever been diagnosed with a mental health issues, or even the mental illness, and those families and friends that support those individuals in that process.
Okay. We're gonna go on to something else. We're leaving the topics of the mentally ill. Go on and talk about frisk and search. Now, there was a young lady on my show a while back named, I think it was a year and a half ago, named Miss Mary Pat Hector. She was a wonderful young lady, and she was the first to tell me about frisk and search there in New York.
Right.
I had never heard of that. Could you tell my listeners a little bit about frisk and search? I'm sure they may have seen it on TV or something, but could you talk about it a little?
Okay, and I really hate to do this, but just so we have a great understanding, the proper term in New York is stop and frisk.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for correcting
that. And that means, right, that the police have the ability to, no matter where you are, where you're going, who you are, what you're wearing, that they have the ability to stop you and search you. And there's a legal process to that that says they have to ask if they can search you. And then if you consent, fine. If you don't consent, then you can continue to be on your way. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have probable cause to even approach you. But what has been happening with that is that it's been really upgraded, and a lot of effort has been put into the urban communities, especially those that are economically disabled, to the degree that it's become almost a way to, I guess, you know, and I really can't say from a police perspective, but it's a psychological profiling that says this individual looks as if he may be involved in some type of crime, or there may be something illegal going on with this individual, and I have the ability to stop him and frisk him. And how that's transformed is the attitude isn't from a public servant anymore, a civil servant. It's not, excuse me, sir, excuse me, ma'am, I noticed this, you know, would you mind if I searched you? And then, you know, the process goes. That's the, I believe that that would be the legal and humanistic approach to it. However, it's not. It's, you know, officers, you know, they jump out of the cars, or they, you know, they kind of walk up on you, roll up on you, whatever term, and they tell you, get against the wall. Hey, come here. What are you doing? It's more of the authoritative or the punitive piece. So, but that's basically the stop and frisk term, and then what normally happens or what has been happening in New York that they have been drastically trying to stop and change.
Okay, I understand that. Understand. Has any I saw on TV where they were told to stop that, weren't they? They would have,
yes,
to stop.
Actually, the judge just made a decision that is unconstitutional, and it's really, really funny. And I think if we shoot back to me mentioning sitting on a train and individuals don't sit next to me, and you said, does it have a psychological effect? And it does. And what I've learned is that people view others in whatever way that they view you, you know, based on their experiences or, you know, whatever, what have you. So if I have a problem with short, heavyset people,
yes,
that wear hats, anytime I see a short, heavyset person wearing a hat, I'm automatically going to have those emotional feelings that, you know, I'm probably going to have a problem with this individual.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that he's the same individual that I had the initial problem with, but that's just from my perspective. That's from my experience. And a lot of that, you know, continues to go with, you know, and it's deeper than a lot of people would think, because that's part of police officer training, to be able to sense certain things within certain individuals. However, because there's been such an overwhelming focus on blacks and criminality, that's basically it. Remember, I said I fit the profile, I fit the stereotype.
I understand what you're saying, and I understand that you also said that you had some run-ins with the law. I don't want you to tell what type of run is, but I want you to know that you have more than proven yourself. I don't know if you actually did. You actually go to prison?
Yes, I did.
Rehabilitated, and you are doing wonders for the southern New York.
Thank you.
That's
what
I'll call it, because that's what you call it.
Yeah, Southern Queens.
You're doing wonders for the people there, and you should be able to expand that, because the things you have said here have helped people who have never went to prison.
Right, ever. Right.
So the things you're doing are positive. They're good things, and I just want to say thank you.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share, to be able to let people know that there are individuals who have. One of my mentors used to tell us, and he tells me even to the day, he said, you made a mistake. You're not a mistake. And
it made a mistake.
My life, because it gave me, it empowered me to say, hey, I can do something different. I don't have to, you know, allow a mistake or a challenge or a poor decision in my life to control the rest of my life. I can move forward. I can grow. So I thank you for the opportunity because you've become a part of that in allowing me to be able to move forward and others, you know, such as myself. And everyone isn't going to be, you know, they're not going to do the self-study that I put in. They're not going to, you know, do a lot of the trainings, although a lot of people will. But some people, they just, you know, kind of have to get it on their own. But I believe, you know, as well as the Beautiful Men and Women Foundation or company is based on this, that we all have within us the innate ability to be beautiful, that we can do it inside out. It's an inside out process, and we can become. And when I stop believing that individuals have the ability to change, that's when I need to change not just my business, but, you know, what my purpose is. So I sincerely appreciate you for asking me to do the interview. This has been a wonderful opportunity for me.
Yes, and I have one more question.
Sure.
I noticed that you had worked with concentration on the mind. I just want to ask you a question. What is the way to improve concentration in the mind? If you can answer quickly, because we only have like 3.5 minutes.
Okay, the power of concentration. One of the best ways to improve the power of concentration is to know what it is that you're doing quickly. What that means is, if I know that I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm going to use a specific, if I know I'm supposed to be doing social studies homework, anything that doesn't have to do with social studies homework, I must be able to put it to the side and devote my time, however long, 30 minutes or an hour, to social studies. And that is a pattern that you have to develop. It doesn't necessarily, you know, start out that you can do it. When people who don't read begin to read, they normally end up with a headache. But after a while, the headache goes away, and you can continue to lock in and focus on it. And also to know what your talent is. You know, it's easy to focus on something that you love as opposed to something that you don't.
All right.
So, yeah, that's the power of concentration. I love it. Martin Luther King put in the purpose of education. He talked about the power of concentration and worthy objectives upon which to concentrate. So that's a very, very beautiful piece, The Purpose of Education by Martin Luther King. He wrote it when he was still at Morehouse. Fabulous
okay.
piece. Yeah.
I appreciate you coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Ms.
Not a problem, Ms. Butler. I'm hoping to be on Show Talk again.
Right.
And I want to be one of the first 5 guests when you get your television show. To actually be able to come on down and sit down. That's right. That's right. When you get the television show, and I want to come down and sit and cross my leg, and we can do this all over again.
That's not 100% yet, but I'm hoping.
Okay.
But it won't be anything real huge. It'll be small. But, you
that's
know,
okay.
everything God blesses me with, I'm
that's
grateful.
Right.
I'm grateful to God. And
I would just
Mr. Dunneman. Oh, you put it out there, but
right.
Not,
you have to put in the atmosphere.
Yeah, but it's not 100% yet.
That's okay. It'll come through.
Okay, but we're gonna speak it to life. Okay.
Right.
All right.
That's right.
Okay. All right.
That's
well,
right.
Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela. But I've enjoyed having you. You are a very intelligent gentleman, a very very intelligent man, and I hope you get to do more. Work, great work, and help plenty of more people, and I pray that God blesses you abundantly.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I
every
pray.
Every way that you need to be blessed.
Thank you. Thank you. And I pray the same identical prayer for you, Ms. Butler. You've been a great host and a charm, and I really, really appreciate it.
And thank you. And thank you. And I hope you've touched somebody, helped somebody, maybe if not the people. If not the people listening, someone that they know. Thank you for
okay, beautiful.
Coming on the show. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. You have
good
a wonderful
night.
Evening.
You too.
Okay, thank you.